You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Evelina Galang. Evelina, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you so much for inviting me to speak with you, Brainerd. Hi.
Hi. Let's begin by talking about what you're working on now. I know you're going to read to us, and we're going to talk about Lola's House, your book. But
sure.
What are you working on at the moment? What's occupying your
creative
interest?
I'm working on a love story is what I'm working on. It's a novel called Beautiful Sorrow, Beautiful Sky. And I have been researching for a couple of years to prepare for the writing of this book. It's a love story between two 70-year-old people. And she, her name is Delore, is a recent widow who is also a surviving Filipina comfort woman. The only person who knows that is her husband, who has just passed away. And he, the love interest, is an Asian-American man in the west coast of California. And they happen to meet at a community center when she's visiting her family. He is smitten. She wants nothing to do with him. But he is charming, and he starts to break the walls down between them. Then she discovers that, you know, she's been thinking that he's Filipino-American because he's Asian-American, and they're in this community center, but finds out that, in fact, he's Japanese-American and was a child in the internment camps during World War II. So they have a shared experience of World War II, but obviously very different experiences. And the question of the book is, does he get the girl? That's what I'm working on.
That sounds great. And to talk a little bit about, because I know this is, you've touched on this before, but the character in that book, a comfort woman, can you explain a little bit about what that means for the readers who may not know, and
sure.
specifically,
Absolutely.
You know, in the context of where she was, because that was something that happened to a number of different cultures. But yeah, what does that mean in the context of the book that you're writing?
Right. So the Filipina comfort woman is one of the women taken during World War II. During World War II, the Japanese Imperial Army captured over 400,000 women and girls all over Southeast Asia and Asia, wherever they occupied during the war, and placed young girls as young as 8 years old, as old as 42, into these military sex slave camps, and they were kept there from 2 weeks to, you know, 6 months to however long they were occupying that particular area. And for the Filipinas, there were about 1,000 women. Historians estimate 1,000 women were taken all over the island. So there are, you know, 7,000 islands in the Philippines. And I actually have done research for almost 20 years with the Filipina comfort women. And their situation is a little different than the women in Korea and in China. Their comfort stations were these occasional, like, makeshift comfort stations, sometimes churches, sometimes city government locations, sometimes people's homes, but they were kept there and made into military sex slaves. So this particular woman, Delore, was in the provinces when she was taken as a young woman and kept there for some time. And now the work that I've been doing with them has been a work where the women themselves are looking for reparations from the Japanese government, and they still have not received that to this day. And it's still quite an international struggle for many of the cultures who have had experiences with comfort women. But that's where Delore's character comes from, this experience of having been taken and kept in this occasional makeshift comfort station.
So thanks for explaining that. You know, it's so incredibly disturbing to hear even some more details of that. You know, different novels, I've read different aspects of it, and of course in some historical accounts. But, you know, the kind of research you've been doing, I'm interested in, because it must be very difficult to do that research. I mean, besides all the post-traumatic stress disorder these women have, rebuilding relationships and lives, and all the, you know, everything that they have to manage personally, emotionally, psychologically to survive seems, you know, so brutal, you know, as if the experience itself wasn't horrific enough, the kind of aftermath of having to deal with this. So what always kind of fascinates me about writers researching material like that is I think, Jesus, you know, how could you keep researching that? That seems like that would also be very brutal and difficult for you to do. So how can you do that?
Well, for me, it was a very personal experience in the sense that I, you know, went off like 20 years ago with some of my students to the Philippines to engage with some of the survivors at the time, and they would have been in about the age of my character, in her 70s. So they were in their 70s and still had some of their strength, and really they were among the first comfort women to actually fight for themselves and ask for reparations themselves, you know, rather than having people do it on their behalf. And I met them and didn't realize how I would fall in love with them and their stories. And in fact, you know, Lola is a Tagalog word for grandmother, and they're known as the Lolas. And they really, in some ways, became my grandmothers, the way they took me on and my students on. And it has been a difficult journey, you know, just being with them, uncovering their stories, and then sticking with it for as long as we did. You know, I had over 40 hours of interview tapes that were not all in English that had to be transcribed and translated. And it was really kind of like quite a I think probably the big test of my life. But the thing is, I had this personal attachment to the women and to also witnessing their stories coming from them. And it put a fire under me, frankly. I mean, I never dreamed that, you know, this book will be my second book of fiction that focuses on that research. The first was Angel de la Luna and the Fifth Glorious Mystery, which came out in 2013, I believe. I had no idea that this material would be so a part of my consciousness that I would be writing about it not only in the nonfiction that I did, but also the fiction and the way I imagine the world and women in their bodies.
Right. And so before we continue to talk about that and more, do you want to read a little bit from your book and maybe tell us a little about it? It's Lola's House that you're reading from, right?
Yeah, Lola's House. So I just thought I'd read the very opening. I can read the opening and maybe one of the testimonies to give you a sense of really where all the kind of my creative inspiration has been coming from lately. I feel like, you know, just to set it up, I feel like the justice is not out there yet. I feel like the world does not truly understand what has happened to these women, that these women speak up and tell their stories so it will never happen again is what they say, but we're still not listening. So I will read just a little bit from Lola's House, which is my work with the comfort women and documenting 16 of their stories, of their testimonies and sort of my work with them, and say this is why I can't stop writing about them, because I haven't seen the justice that they're looking for, and I'm hoping that writing these stories is a way of doing that. So
and the justice they're looking for, just to touch on that for a minute,
yes, sure.
is reparations.
They're looking for a formal apology. Yes, they're looking for three things. The first thing is they're looking for a formal apology from the Japanese government, and that is something that the Diet will vote on and issue, not something from the Prime Minister, not a personal apology from one government official, but something from the government of Japan. Number one, a formal apology. Number two, reparations. If not for them, then for the families who have been left behind and who have suffered greatly from the effects of war and their sexual slavery. And number three, what they're looking for is a place in history, a way of documentation and commemoration of the experiences that they went through in order for these atrocities not to recur. So the three things, apology, reparation, and documentation is what they're looking for.
Very good. Okay, now, I interrupted you. You were introducing the text that you're about to read.
Yeah, so this is from Lola's House, and the first is, the book is a combination of their testimonies in first person, direct translations of their testimonies, and then just my relationship and my journey through discovering their stories and kind of working with them. I found that it would have been difficult just to have one testimony after another for the reader. And when I was looking for a structure for the book, I realized that the way I kind of took care of myself would, and the stories in between our documentations were ways of maybe giving space and breath for the readers in between the experiences. So I'll just read a little bit. The first is, through the mercy of God. In our most intimate conversations, you will hear the Lola say, Ta'awa ng Diyos, like a chorus to a song, or the last prayer on a string of beads, Ta'awa ng Diyos. After 50 years, the women come forward. One by one, they hear the story of Lola Rosa Hansen on the radio, a woman like themselves, shamed into silence, but not anymore. Is there anybody else she wants to know? Are there others? And one at a time, the women take a jeepney to Lola's house. They ask their grandchildren to bring them. They ride a motor tricycle with their grown daughters. A former beauty queen greets them, helps them organize, tells them to fight. For the first time, the grannies will sit together and see women who have had to endure the same secret for 50 years. They will speak their stories. They will stand on streets in protest. They will seek justice. How do you manage it, you ask? How? You say, Pa'ano, Lola, Pa'ano. And they look at you and smile. Sa'awa ng Diyos, they whisper, through the mercy of God. It doesn't matter if she is Catholic or Muslim, or if God has not seen the walls of her kitchen. She will at some point tell you, I have made it through the mercy of God. Sa'awa ng Diyos. And then just to give you a sense of testimony. Here's a testimony of Virginia BMR, Lola's House, Quezon City, Metro Manila, July 1999. I am Lola Virgie. I was born on May 5th, 1929. I was orphaned when I was 2 years old and brought to Manila before the war. I was a vendor for my uncle near the river in Delpan. 14 years old, I was not thinking of war because we were so poor. When the Japanese first came, we lived in Intramuros. They captured the civilians, and my uncle was not spared. For a long time, there was no food, and people were dying of hunger. So one day, for my aunt, I went across the street searching for food. Five Japanese soldiers on a jeep stopped. I ran because they were looking for women. They came after me. When they caught me, I struggled. They held my hands down, and I thought they would kill me. They pulled my hair. They jabbed my back with their bayonets. They hauled me onto the jeep like a pig bound for market. They kicked me. They pulled me up only to throw me down again. They drove me to what is now the customs house. We took a turn near Jones Bridge and headed south to the garrison. I thought they would kill me. When we got there, they put me in a room with many other prisoners. I didn't recognize any of the women. I just wanted to get out, but there was nothing I could do, so I cried. The Japanese soldiers undressed me, and because they were still pointing their guns at me, I was scared. I could do nothing but resign myself to what they were doing. I suffered for months, and sometimes when I think of it, I can still feel the pain. When I was there, they would not feed me. I'd wait for leftovers for those who pitied me. The soldiers made me wash their clothes and clean their sleeping quarters. I suffered for 3 months until one day there was a riot. The Japanese could not determine who was their enemy. Everyone ran. I crawled under the barbed wire fence, and then I ran toward the Pasig River. I had no idea if I was being followed, but I ran as if I were. When I got to the river, I jumped in. I hid under a water lily floating among the grass, and I rested. And slowly, I began to move underwater. But I did not know how to swim, and I was afraid they'd see me in the water. So I crawled through the water slowly. I don't know how, but I floated to the other side of the river, which was big and wide. By then, I was not afraid anymore. I didn't care if I drowned. I was more afraid that they might catch me again. When I reached the other side, I saw people, and I was scared because I thought they were Japanese, but they were civilians. And when I rose from the water, I was surprised to see my dress was torn from the barbed wire fence, and my skin, too. Blood flowed from my wound. I was bleeding everywhere. I felt nothing. The people bandaged me up. By the time I was well enough to look for my aunt, she had evacuated from Manila. So two couples adopted me. I worked for them, sewing clothes. Later, when I found my aunt, I didn't tell her what had happened to me because I was ashamed. That's not excellent for you today. Yeah.
Incredible. And so upsetting. So tell me a little bit about which, of course, that ends with and began with the idea of being shamed into silence. I mean, of course, I understand that basically, but I imagine that's cultural as well. And I know that
right.
you're of Filipino descent. You're
right.
You're the first child born here, but you're obviously embedded in that culture. What does that mean exactly? Shamed into silence.
Right. So there's this cultural kind of there's a cultural I don't want to say norm, but you know, we have this phrase of chismis and hiya, shame and gossip. And, you know, for 50 years, the women, they kept silent. Like, the war happened, the war ended. There was no conversation about the comfort woman experience. No woman was coming forward. And part of that had to do with kind of that feeling that even though you were the victim, somehow you are responsible. And the way the culture supported that feeling of being responsible for what happened to them. There's a way that, you know, one of the women, Lolo Orduja, when she went home, her family, though they loved her, felt like it was better for her not to come home, to go to Manila because of the great shame of what her experience brought to the family and to herself. And I think that many of the women, I think, you know, the women that I have met who have survived any kind of sexual abuse oftentimes feel a certain amount of, like, responsibility, though it is not their experience, you know, though it is not their responsibility. You know, there is a certain amount of that. And I guess in the culture there is a greater feeling of that. So rather than coming forward, you know, now we have hashtag Me Too, where women are now coming forward and they feel empowered to speak their truth, which is so important and so wonderful. But during the time that this was happening and in the culture, there was not that feeling that you could come forward and tell your story and be supported. So I think that's what they meant by, you know, they were shamed into silence for 50 years.
And so that is changing now. I mean, at a moment when I think it's, of course, critical for that to change. But is that's also what's fueling the reparations movement as well?
I would hope so. I actually think that, you know, when this all broke out, my feeling was that the comfort woman story is just a part of that continuum that actually, you know, this cry for reparations, which you know, began 50 years after the war, which included the Korean comfort women and the Chinese comfort women and the Japanese comfort women, because there were Japanese comfort women, you know, it included all these women. I think that they actually were laying the groundwork for what is happening today. That said, there's a lot of talk and the movement now, people are speaking up, but I'm wondering, you know, what is the result of that? I'm, you know, it's still happening. it's still like it's still happening now. I mean, all over, you know, in the Congo and in the, you know, there you still see women being disrespected and treated not like human beings, their bodies being taken. So on the one hand, we're a more vocal culture and society globally, but I haven't seen a stop to this. And part of that, I think, has to do with the original question the comfort women have, which is, where is our apology? Why are you not listening?
Evelina, thank you so much for what you've shared today and your work. I want to ask you one last question, which is, what are you reading at the moment?
What am I reading? You know what? I've been wanting to, you know, I teach at the University of Miami, so I'm teaching all year round and reading things that I would like to teach that I'm currently teaching. But for the first time, as school has ended, I picked up and have been wanting to read this book, There, There by Tommy Orange. I've just begun reading, finally. I've been wanting to read that for months now. And I'm so delighted to have begun that book and to see the way he has started that book. I don't know, have you read There, There yet?
I haven't.
It's something else. I'm really looking forward to the rest of the stories, but it's political, it's cultural, and it's good storytelling. That's what I can see so far. I'm in it. So who knows how I'll feel at the end, but right now I think it's wonderful.
Which is There, There by Tommy Orange. You're speaking.
Yes.
Evelina, thank you so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate this.
And thank you for inviting me. I enjoyed speaking with you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.